America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Are you ready for a sudden violent awakening? It's like this, see? It's like if you have a CPAP, see? Because I do. I have a CPAP now. I had the mouth guard for a long time, and I still do. I like to travel with the mouth guard. But it just wasn't stopping my snoring. I slept fine, but it wasn't stopping the snoring, so my wife was having an issue with it. So I finally got the CPAP, okay? And so now I'm sleeping fine with the CPAP, and I'm not snoring. But the problem is that if I drink a lot of water before I go to bed, I will get acid reflux. And I know that I've said this to doctors, and they're like, it doesn't really make sense that that water would cause that, but okay. But I'm 100% of the time, if I drink a lot of water before bed, which I like to do, then I'm going to get acid reflux in the night. So I have to stop doing that. But I did it the other day. I forgot. I just drank a whole bunch of water because it wasn't quite bedtime. You know, I'm like, I think I can get away with it a half an hour before I'm going to bed. Apparently, I can't. About an hour into sleeping with my CPAP on, I just violently woke up all of a sudden, and my wife like, "Whoa, what are you doing? Well, it's because that acid reflux is pushing up. Well, the CPAP is pushing air. It's pushing down. And so it keeps it down until the acid gets so heavy that it actually overcomes even the forced air and makes its way into your throat and your mouth. And then all of a sudden, you cannot breathe. And so you gasp, but you're wearing the mask and you can't get any air. And so you're like, and I yanked up out of bed, pulled that mask off, and deeply inhaled, and then all of a sudden you got all this acid in your mouth, and you're going, like it's a horrible, horrible way to wake up. And I just have to not drink as much water before bed, which I hate not doing, and it solves it. Anyway, why am I telling you all this? Well, that's the kind of wake-up call that America may have in the midterms next year. Allow me to explain.
Wow, Wiggins America.
Republicans have a chance to change the way America does midterms, basically. And part of that you already know. Part of that you're following this week with the Supreme Court case involving the Voting Rights Act. I get all that. But I'm specifically talking about more long-term stuff. Now, to do so, we have to talk about the short term. We have to talk about 2026, because that's the big one right now. Not only is it in the middle of Trump's term, and if we've seen before, that if Democrats take the House in the midterms, they're just going to do endless investigations of Trump and impeach him for nothing. You know, they're just going to come up with something. The last impeachment, I should say, the first impeachment of Donald Trump was completely worthless. He was talking to, do you remember who? Zelensky of Ukraine, about corruption, possibly involving the Biden family. Of which we know to be like 75% of that true now. So all of that was completely vindicated. And then they impeached him over looking into the corruption of the Biden family, which ended up running the country for 4 years. It's really unbelievable to look back at this stuff. And I'm really looking forward to getting past the Trump era so that there can be more of looking at this stuff for vindication. Because I don't even think we're really halfway there yet. I think there's a lot more to come in the Trump era that we find out, oh my gosh, look how deep and bad this corruption was. Not from Trump, but from everybody else. And I'm including some Republicans in that too. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk about the midterms. I pulled this clip up from Harry Enten. He's the chief pollster for CNN. And I really like this guy. I don't think he's conservative at all, but I do think he's really data-driven. He just loves numbers. I kind of am like that. That sometimes, look, I'll report to you numbers that I don't like just as much as I report to you numbers that I do like, even though the ones I do like are much more fun to report. I'll give you the bad news with the good news because I just like the data. I like trying to figure out what's going to happen ahead of time, and the data is the best way to do that. Harry Enten is very similar. Listen to what he's saying about the midterms here in comparison where we are now to 2017, 2018, to those midterms.
17, 2018, right? Because that's sort of the baseline. That was, of course, the first Trump term. That was where Democrats were sort of keeping pace. You go back to April, look at the generic congressional ballot. What'd you see? You see plus three Democrats in 2025 in April. You see plus three Democrats back in April of 2017. Now jump over to this side of the screen. What happens? Well, the Democrats are no longer keeping pace with the pace that they were setting back in 2017, 2018. You look back in 2017, you saw that the Democrats had leaped up to an 8-point advantage. I remember covering this. I remember a lot of folks, including myself, saying, you know what, Republicans look pretty decent right now in terms of the fact that they had the House, they had the Senate, they had the presidency, but things were likely going to flip. And I was looking for the same signs this year. The bottom line is it hasn't happened, Kate.
Oh, it hasn't happened yet. That's really, really interesting because you have two terms of the same president now to compare to. You have him going into the midterms in his first term. You have him going in the midterms as a second term. Throughout his first term, throughout the first year, you had Democrats rising and rising and rising in their congressional approval rating in basically like the generic ballot. Who would you vote for between a Democrat and a Republican? No name on the ballot, just which party. Democrats started at like 3% and they went up, 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 up to about right now in 2017. They were at plus 7%. Now, that's really pretty good going into a midterm. Now, that's not quite going in. You know, we're still talking about a year away, but that's where they were at this point. This time, though, for all of the hand-wringing and the, hey, look at this poll and look at that poll and whatever, the generic congressional ballot has remained almost flat. Now, that doesn't mean it's even. It's still plus three Democrats, and they could take the House with even just a plus three. But then you come in with redistricting and the Voting Rights Act and all that, and Harry Enten gets into that and how that plays into it.
Well, when it hasn't happened, Democrats have stayed basically steady. They have fallen off the pace. Democrats were way out ahead back in 2017 on the generic congressional ballot. And now we're basically looking at Democrats ahead. But again, they are so far in back of the pace that they set back there. And so I think what a lot of folks are seeing, folks like myself, are saying, wait a minute. Given what we might be seeing in redistricting, is this plus three going to be enough, Kate Baldwin?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. One change from that cycle is also this mid-decade redistricting effort that we've been covering so much. Add that in, and what do you get?
Okay, so we add that, and we take a look at the national picture, but then we, of course, taking a look at the state legislators, right? They are potentially changing things, and there are two things that are going on here. First off, net mid-decade redistricting gains. If both sides max out at this point, there are more Republican gains possible than Democratic gains.
Oh, wait a second. Did you hear that? There are more Republican gains possible than Democrat gains. Okay, that's cool going forward. But do you realize what that means in the reverse? That means Democrats have been mastering this game of gerrymandering for a lot longer than Republicans have. They've been maxing out their ability to gerrymander better than Republicans have for a long time. And that's earned under the current rules. We'll get into how those rules might be changing here soon in a second. But listen to that. And doesn't it make you just, I don't know about mad, it makes me disappointed that we haven't really been playing on an even field. We've been handicapping ourselves by saying, oh, well, we'll be more fair. Look, Missouri, I'm looking at you. Missouri has done this for a long time. I was barking up that tree like crazy throughout 2021 and 2022 when they were doing the actual redistricting for Missouri based on the new Senate or based on the new census map. And people just wouldn't, they just didn't care. It was like Missouri Republicans were like, eh, that's the way it's always been, though. I was actually told by people who are involved in the political process in Missouri that it's actually not even possible to draw a 7-1 map in Missouri because you'd make the Republican gain too weak and it would actually weaken all their surrounding seats. So it's not even possible. And yet here we are now with a bold Governor Kehoe, congratulations, Missouri, pushing this through and saying, no, we absolutely should have done a 7-1 map. That's what we should have been doing the whole time. So all these complacent, halfway liars who were saying, it's not really possible. That's the old traditional conservative country club mindset that says that's the way it's always been. You don't realize the battle you're freaking in right now for the soul of the nation. Sorry if I'm getting a little too intense here on the weekend for you, but that's my opinion. Now, that's what it's been, and we're, of course, addressing that now because we have bold leadership at the very top in Donald Trump, who absolutely is pushing these things, although some governments, some local governments like Texas, they were doing it anyway. So you don't have to give Trump credit for all of it, but he's getting credit for the push continually in states like Missouri. Now, transitioning in here, let's bring up Harry Enten back, because I want him to explain the Voting Rights Act. Now, I've dove into the Voting Rights Act in the last week or so because I'm really fascinated by how the Supreme Court case will play out. But he explains, based on what the Supreme Court might do in gutting the Voting Rights Act, which is actually just getting rid of racial gerrymandering, which is just political. And I'll make this point real quick before I jump back into Harry Enten here. If you don't understand what Article 2 of the Voting Rights Act is and the racial part of gerrymandering and redrawing districts, just understand this very, very shorthand thing. It has nothing to do with race. Race was used for political purposes. And so if you're a Democrat, you are against the Voting Rights Act being removed because it benefits, fill in the blank, I can hear you in your car, Democrats. Democrats want to keep it because it benefits Democrats politically. Republicans want to get rid of it because it benefits Democrats politically. That's the shorthand. And that's really all that matters in this, because nobody's actually being a crusader to try to improve race relations on either side. The only thing that matters in this is how it plays out for Republicans and Democrats. And Democrats have used this for, what is it, like 65 years now or something, to benefit Democrats. And now it could go away because the argument before the Supreme Court says, why should race be used in determining congressional districts at all? That's the basic argument that is before the Supreme Court. How it plays out, we don't know. But if they do remove it, here's how it would look nationally for Congress, according to Harry Enten of CNN.
Yes, the Democrats might try to counter a Texas and a California, but you go along in the different states and basically Democrats run out of room where Republicans are able to gain and gain and gain. If both sides max out, we're probably looking at a GOP gain of plus 7 House.
Okay, that's just with normal redistricting. Then he goes into Voting Rights Act and how that would impact it.
Seats. That doesn't even take into account the potential gutting of the VRA that is right now going to be in front of the Supreme Court. If you add that in, you
voting
could
right,
be
the
looking...
Voting Rights Act.
What? Yes,
voting
exactly right. The Voting Rights Act. If you add that in, then you could be looking about adding 10, 12, 15, 17 on top of this 7 seats. So I think a lot of folks like myself are looking at this. We're seeing, hey, wait a minute. Those national polls are, Democrats are not gaining the way that we expected.
Let's take the middle there and say it ends up being about 7 seats that Republicans are able to add if they max it out currently. If the Voting Rights Act goes away, Article 2 of it, where race is no longer involved in districting, Republicans could maybe double that to get to 15 seats extra. That's extra on top. So it becomes very, very difficult for Democrats to take back the House. But keep in mind, as we go about this, you're going to hear a lot of screaming, especially with the Voting Rights Act. You already heard some with redistricting. But California's going to do the same thing. And the argument's hard to make for Democrats that, oh, Republicans are doing this terribly. And it's so bad that they're doing it because they've been doing it. So it's a hard argument to make. With the Voting Rights Act, they'll be screaming from the rooftops because they're going to say, ah, this Supreme Court is allowing racial, is reducing the voices of minorities, something like that. It'll be something like that. When ultimately it's actually removing race from consideration at all, which up until now it has been. Now that's if they actually go through with it. We don't know if they will. But ultimately what you're looking at here is, and by the way, really quick, my guess is that they will reduce its impact, but they won't completely remove it based on what Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts in the middle will do. But anyway, let's say they add, even in the middle there, we'll say 10 seats. You're getting to the point where Republicans, the map is so tilted in their favor that you're like, where was this the whole time? Because Democrats had been tilting the map in their favor for years, for decades and decades. My entire life has seen maps tilted in favor of Democrats because of these kinds of things that Republicans were never willing to play the game of. And now they are. And you're realizing, oh my gosh, do we have like Republican ruled Congress here for years? Because the Senate map already favors them. And now the House map would too. Long term, you could be looking at, for the most part, it probably won't be exclusive, Republican Congresses, you know, like 75% of the time or something for the next 20 years. Issues change, things change, but Republicans are finally catching up to how to play this game. And it's about time. It's about freaking time. Republicans grew a backbone and did what they needed to do for years that Democrats were doing right in front of them, and they wouldn't do themselves. This is Wiggins America. We have a big show for you, so stick around. Let's talk about our anniversary party, which you're invited to before we get to this break. This Thursday, you are invited to come out and spend time with all of us, and I do mean all of us. All the hosts on 97.1 that are local anyway are going to be there, along with some others, many, many others that you hear on the station. We're all going to be at Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield Thursday night celebrating the 25th anniversary of 97.1 being on the air. You are invited. Go to 971talk.com to RSVP. It is free.
Wiggins America.
Thanks for listening this weekend. It's been a good show so far. I know we're just like barely halfway into it. I went really long in that segment, so thanks for sticking with me. But I get really into redistricting and numbers and polls and stuff like that. And coming up next, I'm going to have an interview with Joel Penton. He is in a new movie that is coming out this week, this Thursday. Here's what's weird about it. It only is out Thursday, but it's in St. Louis theaters, and you can see it. It's called Off School Property. I'm getting no endorsement money from it or anything like that. I just want to make the record clear that I just think this sounds like, and I haven't seen the movie yet because like it's not out, but the topic itself sounds fantastic. It's about what society, basically removing the Bible from schools and what that has brought about. Probably some good and bad, but I think it's probably mostly bad. I mean, just knowing the topic. So stick around. That's coming up next. But before we get there, I had a quick conversation on the Annie Fry show that I really genuinely became interested to see if anybody else has ever done this or if you could still do this. It was a way, without me saying game the system, but it was a way when we were in early college, so I would have been like 18, 19 years old, for me and my friends to go to a restaurant and pay. I mean, you really could almost pay like 50 cents and get full. And I just want to know if anybody else ever did this.
Wow, Wiggins America.
Now, when I was in early college, I had figured out a system, and I'll tell you what that system is right now because I'm not sure that they still allow it. I think we exploited it too much and they closed the loophole. But if you...
Yeah, wait, is this... Did you say Olive Garden?
No.
This
no,
is where?
Same concept. Fazoli's. If you went...
You had a Fazoli's loophole?
Oh, yeah. And it could still exist. I don't know. I'm not going to press it. But at the time, you know, when you're 19, you can eat as much as you possibly can of anything, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And you're just trying to fill up. And at that point, you're almost trying to, like, see how much you can fill up with your guys.
How miserable can I make myself?
Yeah.
Yeah. How miserable can I make myself?
Thank
How much
you.
Can I eat?
Thank you, Ethan. So
gross.
What you would do was you'd go to Fazoli's and maybe you'd order a drink, but you didn't even have to do that. You could just order water if you wanted to. And you'd just order the sauce. You'd just say, here's 35 cents. Give me a marinara.
Are you serious?
And then it was unlimited breadsticks.
Did you do this for real?
Oh, yeah, we did this.
How many times in your life have you participated in this theft?
Two, three times, but... What we usually would do is not just the, like we realized we could, but we always would order, you know, a couple pieces of pizza and make a meal out of it because we did kind of feel bad about doing it. But you absolutely could do it. And we would order at the time, it was probably $4 for a little pasta meal or whatever.
Those were the days.
And then you'd order the sauce, and you'd just keep getting sauce and just hang out.
There is no way in the year 2025 that you could get away with that now.
American media export. Wiggins, America.
Okay, that's the story. Now, furthermore, I would like to know that if you could actually still do this, because I don't really know. COVID changed a lot, so even if they were still doing the walk around, give you free breadstick stuff at certain restaurants, because like they do it at Olive Garden, which is how our conversation actually started, that how many Olive Garden breadsticks could you eat? I determined that if I was also eating a meal, and then I decided, okay, I'm also going to gorge on breadsticks, I could maybe do 8, but that would be horrible. I would feel terrible the next day. My joints get all achy when I eat a lot of bread, so it would be a bad idea. But ultimately, I could do that, especially when I was younger. I was like 19 years old. We'd go into Fazoli's and do that. And I just wonder if anybody, A, has ever done it, and B, if you could still do it. I think almost legally, I have to say, I'm not endorsing that you do this, but I mean, what other ones could you do? I guess that's the other question. Contact me at Radio Wiggins on Twitter and let me know if there were other ways or, you know, things that you found when you were younger or even now that you're like, yeah, this is kind of a loophole in the system, but it does work. I love hearing those stories. In fact, if you tell me a good one, I'd like to tell it next week on this show here on Wiggins America at Radio Wiggins on Twitter, or you can find me on Facebook. It's actually probably the easiest way to contact me is on Facebook, by finding me and sending me a message. Well, I got the opportunity to talk to Joel Penton off air here a little bit. We'll get into the movie, but first, you were what position did you play for Ohio State?
I played defensive tackle for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
2002 to 2005?
2002 to 2006. I redshirted my first year and then had 4 years.
Dude. And then the little bit different industry you're in now with movies.
It's a little bit. I don't know. Both. I play defensive tackle, and so I was always looking to impact somebody. And now we are impacting people in other ways.
Oh, my gosh. You're such a pro. What a great way to start the interview. Well, Joel Penton is here. He is the founder and CEO of LifeWise Academy. And the reason we're talking to Joel is because you've got a new movie. It's called Off School Property. Explain this movie, Joel.
Yeah, well, Off School Property talks about the tragic tale of how decades ago our nation systematically removed Bible education from the public school day. It's had a disastrous effect on our youth as the Bible has been taken out of schools. But very few people realize that in 1952, a door was opened. Something called release time religious instruction, which is a way for public school students to receive Bible education during school hours. It has to be off school property, privately funded, and with parental permission. But public school students really can receive Bible education as part of their public school day. And the film kind of explains all of that. It talks explains how the Bible was central to education in America. It's been removed, but now there's this opportunity to put it back in, and particularly through the organization I'm part of, LifeWise Academy, that gives communities across the country the tools to take advantage of this opportunity.
Joel, are you expecting all of us to accept the premise that our school system has gone downhill since then?
Well, if you're willing to look at the statistics and you're willing to think, yes, I expect you to believe it.
What about people who are going to yell, hey, what about separation of church and state? It sounds like legally that's what you're addressing even in the movie.
That's exactly right. What the movie lays out is that in many ways, no matter where you stand on the issue of separation of church and state, you would have to admit that what we do at LifeWise with release time is a manifestation of the separation of church and state, because it's off school property. That's the name of the film. So students are literally separated from the state school. It is privately funded, so it's separate from state dollars, and it's parent permitted, which means it's separate from state compulsion. And so this is a great way to create an option for families that want Bible education for their kids.
Now, Joel, I don't know if you get into all of this in the movie, but this is a topic that I have really been interested in and covered for a long time. This is something that I think has changed the fabric of the nation the minute that happened, that we said, oh, no, you can't teach any sort of Bible curriculum in schools. But that's not exactly what we're doing now. Like, explain, because you're the expert here, how are things changing in America right now for the better? Because we always talk about, gosh, you know, things have been so bad. But I see good news on the horizon with this topic. Explain that.
Well, I think the pendulum, in a broad sense, culturally, I believe the pendulum is swinging back. I think this little experiment of secularizing everything and pushing the things of God into the margins has failed. I think people see that it has failed. And I think we're seeing, just even in the news, that people are now more curious and more open. And with this particular specific development of release time, the rapid growth of at least our organization, you know, we set a goal to serve 25 schools by 2025. We're confirmed in 1,200 schools, serving tens of thousands of students across dozens of states. Parents have a real hunger for this. They now know that it was not wise to remove the foundation of all education and remove, you know, the foundation of kids' lives. And so they're hungry. They want to reinstall this religious instruction. And we're seeing the hunger, and now we're starting to see the fruit as well.
So this is very exciting to me. When I saw your press release come through, I said, oh my gosh, we got to talk to Joel, because Off School Property is a movie after my own heart. I love this topic, and I think it's so important to the future of the country. There's so many battles we're fighting for right now, but this one is battling for the next generation, the generation after that. The movie Off School Property. Here's one of the reasons I was so encouraged by it. 700 movie theaters carrying this movie. I mean, that's not a small release, Joel.
No, it's not. We're so grateful to be partnering with Fathom Events for this nationwide release. I think that's one other indicator of just the interest that's out there, the hunger, that people are looking for solutions. They're looking to get involved. And so it's, yeah, I believe all 50 states, you know, over 700 theaters. In fact, the number of theaters grows daily. And then, but it's just the one night event, October 23rd. So that's a message for all your listeners. Make sure you get your tickets. That's the time to see it in theaters.
Yeah, so that's why we're talking to you now. So if people want to see this film, so October 23rd, Thursday, that is the one day you can see in theaters Off School Property. So how do you recommend people get those tickets, Joel?
Well, you can find it listed in any of these sites that show, you know, when theaters and where theaters, when movies are showing in what theaters. But probably the best way is to go to our site. We have a page set up for it. Go to lifewise.org. On the homepage, you'll see an ad for this Off School Property film, and it'll take you to a page where you can see a trailer. You can also search by zip code the nearest theater to you, and then from there you can buy your tickets. So go to LifeWise. That's LifeWise.org.
Okay, so if people are searching their local theater and they can't find it, but you know in St. Louis, and you want to see Off School Property one day, this coming Thursday, you can see this movie Off School Property by going to LifeWise.org. Joel, thanks so much for being a part of this movie, being a part of this movement. I think it's so important, and thanks for what you do.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being here. Stick around. We'll be right back. You know, after interviewing him about that movie, I realized that I'm promoting the movie, which is a one-day release, on the exact same night as our anniversary party. So maybe not the best move on my part for the station's sake. But anyway, I do encourage you to go see that movie. It's a great cause. And with it being just a one-night release, it's kind of cool. I'm not really familiar with that model of releasing a movie. So I'm like the model itself is interesting to me, let alone the topic. Anyway, if you missed that, you can get the podcast or rewind or whatever and check it out. But we do have an anniversary party coming up, so I'll promote that too. That is this Thursday. We are turning 25. Actually, we've already turned 25. We're just celebrating this Thursday at Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. We encourage you to come out. So many sponsors that I would like to mention, but just a couple: Rhino Shield and Lore Wine and Distributors and Napoli Brothers feeding us. And, you know, I'm trying to mention them all kind of various times. So if I didn't hit you this time, we're hitting you all throughout the week as well, and have been all month. But all that's to say that you will be in the presence of all of us here at 97.1, because I think every single one of us is going to be there for the party on Thursday night, and it's free. So you can come. You just have to sign up ahead of time at 971talk.com. and RSVP there. But again, it is all free. You can have some drinks. You do have to buy the drinks, but the VIP tickets are sold out. But we invite you to come and just hang out with us on Thursday night, Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. So celebrating 25 years all this month. It's actually a huge accomplishment. As you know, in radio, stations tend to come around for a while and they go away. And you can probably list yourself several stations that you used to listen to that are no longer around. And for some reason, in St. Louis, we have quite a few. Like throughout the country, it's pretty rare to have as many stations that have stuck around as long as they have in St. Louis. So we're among rare company and very, very grateful to be here for 25 years. I've been here for 7, so I got to make a little bit of a mark in that way, and we'll see how long I get to go. You just never know, right? That's why we're celebrating. I was going to bring to you a couple stories before we got to the end of the show here. One of them was about the national deficit, and I just decided, you know what? I don't really need to dive into that. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, is touting that they've actually reduced the amount of deficit, but the problem is if you look at it big picture, you still have a deficit. So they're decreasing the amount that's going into debt, but they're still going further into debt. Like, they haven't reversed it. And the tariffs are actually responsible for that, so I will give them credit. But nobody's addressing the big problem. Nobody's willing to really have the fortitude to go after it. I would say Donald Trump probably would, but he didn't push that hard at budget time, and now we're in the government shutdown, and that's not even really part of the discussion, is to get the balance, the budget balance. It's just not. And I hate that. But anyway, I'm not going to do that whole story because that's the gist of it right there that I just told you. How about this one, though? This one's pretty interesting. A Colorado city, Boulder, Colorado, gave low-income residents $500 a month basic income for 2 years. The results were mixed. That's the headline from MSN. Now, this is a far-left news outlet that is telling you that universal basic income, well, the results weren't quite as good as we were expecting, which means they were probably terrible and didn't achieve anything. Here's the story. 2 years ago, a city in Colorado, that would be Boulder, set out to answer a question. Can giving residents $500 a month with no strings attached meaningfully improve their lives? For the 200 residents, and how do you decide who gets it? You know, you're robbing from one person to give to another. By coercion. They didn't do this on their own. You forced them to. For the 200 residents who participated in the program, the answer has been mixed, according to MSN. Although the payments eased some immediate challenges, long-term or structural issues persisted. Now, I'm going to dive into this a little bit, but let me tell you ahead of time, when they say the payments eased some immediate challenges, duh. If somebody gives you $500, you're going to go, great, I'm going to go spend that $500 on some things I need. Of course, it's going to ease things for you a little bit. But long-term or structural issues persisted. In other words, they gave you the short-term, you got the short-term sugar high, maybe you're able to afford groceries a little bit better that month. By the way, this is on top of like SNAP programs and food stamps and welfare. This is extra. But structural issues and long-term issues persisted, as in it didn't do anything to change their lot in life. You just basically subsidized them, and they produced nothing else for you. They added nothing to society. They just took. Here it is. Such programs differ from a universal basic income. No, it doesn't. Which provides cash payments to an entire population, regardless of income levels. This is basically saying universal basic income for poor people or people who they have applied this too. While basic income programs have been around for a long time, they've surged in popularity in recent years. Editorial, because of socialists. Driven in part by the AI revolution, they say. Some prominent tech leaders have advocated for universal basic income to offset potential income loss as AI increasingly takes over human jobs. Others, however, have called the idea a fantasy. Let me address that real quick and say that if you think that AI is going to eliminate all jobs, look back in history. Look at the Industrial Revolution. This is what people have been saying about technology forever, that it was going to eliminate every job and nobody would have any jobs to do. That's ridiculous. It's never going to happen, and it won't happen with this one either. And there's no history of it ever happening. The jobs just shift into other things. They have become a little more white-collar, and we've actually swung the pendulum too much to where we actually need more blue-collar workers now. Anyway, in 2023, Boulder decided to give this a try. Though the program was called Elevate Boulder and used $3 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds. I think this was Biden-era stuff. The first payments were dispersed in January of 2024. And then they go into quotes from this Omni Center managing director named Sarah Bayless, who is giving you data. Now, all the data, of course, that she's giving you is an attempt to bolster the program. That's why she was hired. So she's not going to give you any bad data. But she says that while modest, consistent cash can ease immediate pressures, financial barriers remain, though, that may only be responsive to larger investments and systemic solutions. See where they're going with this? They're going to give you the good of it, and then they're going to also give you just enough bad to say it worked, but it needs more. I'll read the end of the article here. In this report, the center told Boulder officials that strategic changes are necessary at the system level in addition to cash payments to achieve sustained progress in stability for low-income residents. The overall point of this whole program and this article, which is propaganda for that program, is this. Universal basic income is the goal. That's communism. It's just communism. It's very, very easy. They're implementing it in these small ways in cities so that they can say, oh, look, it does kind of work, but we need more. That's the whole goal. And that's the article, and that's the program. And if they pitch the program to you and I, that will be the pitch. It's not that much. It's only $500. It's only $1,000, and it's not to everybody. But it's a gateway. It's just a little bit here, a little bit there. And then they go, oh, well, it did help, but it didn't help enough. We need more. And meanwhile, the quality of living for everybody else, because you have to rob somebody to give somebody else that money. It's just a fact. You either have to rob it from your future self in debt or rob it from people currently by taxes. Either way, you're taking from somebody else to give to whoever, and you're doing it by coercion. If you do it through charity, great. Then people who have money can decide how to spend that money to help others. If you do it through coercion, then it's the government forcing communism. We're pretty much there in the United States in a lot of ways. Trump is clawing that back, but man, it's tough. Anyway, this was a terrible ending of the show. I should have had like some grand point. And I think the point is that communism is bad. There, perfect end to Wiggins America this week. I don't think that you need to be convinced of that, but I'm just letting you know, here's the ways in which they're trying to implement it. All right. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.